respect we offer to all. In times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sava. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Saranam, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sava. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sava. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Do you have the noble truth of suffering? Dukkha-dharmaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha-nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha-nirodha, gamini-pratipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without itself, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajnaparamitadhyaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the glorious and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By my compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. by compassion and mindfulness that proves this path, by compassion and awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this meditation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this reputation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving-kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through Parakyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience its most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I heir karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi saha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face a new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other. As the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. Suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Just a reminder that we record these Sunday morning groups and disseminate it to monthly donors. Welcome to all those who just arrived from very far away, and it's a day of departures and arrivals, so deep gassho. What shall we look at? Penny.
I had an experience this morning of the moment provides.
The moment provides.
So I have a response to the Socratic email class due this morning. Nothing. Nothing came up. So it's about 9 o'clock, due at 10. So I just did the computer. And what arose was, I don't have a response, and that creates a sense of urgency.
Uh-huh.
And then what I saw was, I was looking at how it is that we behave as we do in certain things I'm part of. And I got what arose was, because we get urgent. Because we think there has to be resolved and it has to happen by a certain time, and that creates urgency. So there it was.
Uh-huh. Yes, so the awareness that the process that you were in was the response that you needed and provided the class.
Yeah.
And the moment does provide.
It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then it was funny because when I was sitting, that arose, and what I was seeing was, what arose then was, so to participate in a direction without a particular response or a deadline, mm-hmm. it's a very different thing than having a response and a deadline. And then conditioning came in and said, oh, hold on to that for the next response.
So to participate in a particular direction without a deadline is very different than to do it that way, with a deadline, and that really is the process of not trusting that the moment will provide.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And in fact, it's an interesting place, that recognition of there isn't a response is somehow a meta-message from life to say, that's the message you need to get. Right? In other words, I say this many times, that sometimes the lack of information is a message from life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a message that there is a lack of information, which is a place to look,
right.
Not there's no information and to get urgent.
Right.
Because that information at some level arrived in a way that made you sit in front of the computer and wait for a response.
Right.
Then the information was possible, that the response is related to the process that prevents the response from coming.
Yeah, and I could see that, if I invented something,
yes.
that it would have just been a head trip.
Yes, and very evident to the person receiving it.
Unfortunately, it probably would be.
Yeah. Thank you. Jen?
I just love that. What I've been looking at that so much, that place of, how do you describe it? It's like, so often what there is to practice with is so close that we can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and we're looking straight through it to what the decoy, mm-hmm. and then to see, the thing that's to practice with is what's right here.
Thing that's to practice with is what we can't actually see.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're saying this, but the projection for me is that we so get focused on the content of what we have to practice with, and life is always talking to us at a process level. So that's why we don't see it, because we're not trained to pick up on process, we're only trained to pick up on content.
So yesterday afternoon we had a discussion and resistance came up, and boy, I thought it was a brilliant brief discussion. I've been looking at it ever since. And we were talking about that place of, I can't remember if we use this analogy, but often we do in this place of, I'm an alcoholic and I decide to quit drinking, and I don't. And then I decide to quit drinking and I don't. And I decide to quit drinking and I don't. And at a certain point, I lose the ability to choose that.
Yes.
That option is no longer there for me. Mm-hmm. And as I was recording that, the image that dropped in was just that, it feels like every time there's that movement to quit, there's an authenticity there, and it's almost like that's a neural pathway that I go down, and if that eventually becomes associated with, and I'm not going to quit, then the pathway is blocked. So one off-ramp is no longer available because it's gotten associated with not quitting.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. In other words, there's authenticity that's a hard desire to do what takes care of the human and go up against the karmic conditioning that prevents us from doing or that resists that.
Right.
And if that process keeps happening, at some point the authentic desire gets encrusted and it's no longer available because the association has been made.
Right.
That there's an identity, the identity that actually doesn't want to quit overshadows energetically the energy available for the authenticity to arise in response.
Yes, yes. Boy, and as I started to look at it, I started to see the million ways resistance can show up on subtle levels.
Yes.
And what we miss is that it's such, truly, I mean, this can sound Pollyanna, but it's such an amazing opportunity for the human. For me as a person, every time resistance comes up, I was looking at it with itching being a perfect analogy. So I've had some opportunities to itch, and I was looking at how the condition process is: it itches, I want to scratch it. I won't itch later. No, I won't scratch later. That's what it is. Right now, it really itches, and I'm going to scratch it. But pretty soon, I won't scratch it anymore.
Yeah. If I satisfy the itch now,
exactly. Yeah.
Then it won't become a bloody sore later. Because if I can get the first scratch, I know I can prevent myself from scratching till it becomes bloody.
Well, actually, what's really true, of course, is right now I can't stand the sensation. I know there's the choice to not scratch it, but I don't want that choice. I want to scratch it. But later, I will not scratch it. Later, right? But it's that same thing. No, what's actually going to happen is it's going to itch much worse. Because the scratching, of course, makes it worse. Right?
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh my gosh, it's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Because there I am, and it's such a gift to have something that concrete to practice with, because there's the sensation that's like, I want to scratch it, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to.
And I strap my wrists to make sure that I don't.
And become that which is going to be with Jen. As she's itching, like last night, I just knew. I was like, okay, it could be a long night, but completely ready. Kind of that sense of, maybe being with a sick child, and it could be a really long night, but that's perfectly all right. I'm ready to be with her, and of course it wasn't. It was like 5 minutes, and then it was done.
Mm-hmm.
But just that, what I saw in it was, I have no ability to control how much there is an itch, but I have so much say over whether I scratch it or not.
Yes.
And it's the exact same thing. So there I am sitting at first thing in meditation this morning, and the thoughts are coming in. I have no ability to control what's going on in the mind, but so much choice about whether I scratch the itch.
Yes.
Whether I go with it, whether I participate with it, whether I basically inflame it.
Yes. Yes. There's so many points you made, Jen, on process level that are so interesting. So the first place is the awareness of the process of how it gets us to engage with it.
Yeah.
Right? So the build up of the sensation to such an extent that you want to give in now because it promises the ability to withstand it later.
Right.
Right? That moment that it's okay to give in now because later you'll be able to go up against me and be successful, which is the lure to actually act on it.
Yeah.
Right? And and the interesting part about that from an experience level is that we know that if we give in, we're gonna be taken over.
That's right.
There's only the choice at the first time.
Yes.
Because if you give in then, you're going to give in to the energy of the momentum of the resistance and the egocentricity of it. Because the moment of choice is the first time you know you can, it's the only time you actually have the power.
That's right.
Because once you give in, now you have to produce the energy, more energy to resist than you would at the time of virgin choice.
That's right, virgin choice, that's a good term. That's
right?
Really true.
So that was one level of it. And the second level of it, knowing that when we can become that which assists, we've actually that was the only thing that works when we're going up against egocentricity, which is to change tracks. So if I decide to resist the urge, then I'm within the system fighting the system.
Yeah.
But if I decide to be compassionate with the person who's resisting the urge, I've actually moved from resistance to compassion, which is the only way you can dissolve conditioned mind.
Yeah, really true. Really true. Because what I just saw when you said that was to be in the trenches with, I have to scratch, I can't scratch, I have to scratch, I can't scratch, I have to scratch, I can't scratch. Oh, that's
right. That's within the system, fighting the system, and actually therefore feeding the impulse that will finally topple us into the energy of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Right. Okay.
Which leads to the third form of the awareness of the practice opportunity in it, which is the only response I do have is the ability to decide what is the response to that which I cannot control.
Right, exactly.
Because there are two elements to that. Only ego would want to say it can control it.
Right.
Because if that's the movement of going back into the system to engage with the very thing, that's what creates the identity, the I that can control it.
Yeah.
But the awareness that we can't and we choose to practice with that is the movement away from going back into the system.
Yeah, because I saw the choice thing. You know, we talk about choice, right? There's this place, there's a way in which you have a choice, there's a way in which you don't. And I was looking at it with, there were several times where I woke up in the middle of the night and I was scratching the back of my leg. And so I didn't have a choice until I was conscious.
That's right.
The minute I was conscious, I did have a choice and I chose not to. And several times, you know, I'm so tired, right, in the middle of the night, I got feeling those sensations of resistance. I got up, out of bed, I stood up, and I said, this is not your life. And you know, just that place of, that's what I mean. Like, it's such an opportunity. When we feel the resistance, it's like, you said it yesterday. Okay, good, then I know I'm doing that. I don't want to stand up. I don't want to. Good, then that's what I'm going to do.
Because, again, going back to that conversation we had about the meta process in life, I was trying to get it when I was trying to articulate the third thing and I didn't get it, but when you said it, is the practice is really, are we fueling the energy towards encouraging the resistance, or am I building the energy not to give in to the resistance?
Yeah.
And that's the choice, that's the only thing we're practicing. The way ego frames it is, it's do I scratch or do I overcome the resistance to scratch? Those are not actually, those are dualistic choices. They're not exit ramps from the process of conditioning. The only exit ramp is totally I'm getting out of that.
Right.
Which is that I'm not going to scratch no matter what. I'm going to get out no matter what. That no matter what conditioning says and gives you the out for, the process is I'm developing the ability to have more energy than the system that wants to resist.
Yes, exactly. If I'm following what you're saying, I think it's what I was reporting about this morning was, wow, it's amazing the sense of joy, freedom, safety even, that there is for me as the person with the sense of this larger support for going up against resistance. Because it's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, to either, what are you going to do to me? There's nothing, right? There's nothing you can throw at me. There's nothing you can say. There's nothing, because if the practice is one of not buckling to the resistance, then it's like, there's nothing you can do.
Yes, and so if I'm tracking you, as we practice the choosing something that is not suffering, there's a growing sense of confidence and faith that you're able to do that. There's an adequacy to go up against it, which is so interesting, because its major, its power over us is, what will I do to you? You won't be able to stand it.
You won't be able to stand it.
And when we can say, you know, no matter what you do to me, it's not going to make a difference. And this, I think, is key to my sense of being okay.
Exactly.
Because my sense of being okay is not conditional.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then it's absolute freedom.
And that, so if you start throwing something really hard at me, or, you know, I mean, literally, if it starts itching really a lot, then I have a chance to practice really a lot with not scratching it.
Yes.
Right? And then the times where it's not itching, then I just get to enjoy not itching, right? So we don't need to create it. We don't need to, like, make it into a battle. But realizing that when it does pitch to that level of battle, I'm adequate to it.
Yes, because you practice not giving it to that level.
Exactly.
So you know, within quotes, you realize that you can withstand it.
Yeah.
And I think the pernicious piece is, if we give in to it at a low level, then it can win the conversation when it says, when I up the threshold of that pain, you're not given a buckle.
Because you know it's true.
Because you know it's true.
Even though on a fundamental level, it's completely not true.
Yes.
But on the level that we're in the middle of, it is true. Yes. And so it can really get us.
And so the lesson in that is, we don't quit. Even if we quit at a certain level, it's a practice.
Yeah.
So we're going to get the opportunity, because it is going to up it.
Yep.
And we are going to go up against it. And the next time, we develop the confidence and the skill and the mastery not to give in.
And that virgin choice comes around again.
Yes, the virgin choice comes around.
It really does.
Thank you. Sequoia.
I just don't want to leave this topic yet. That's
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It's fascinating. And there's just so much here. And I, too, was just struck yesterday with the conversation about resistance. And this morning, conversation is just really...
I'm going to reflect you because...
Okay.
Oh, you have to bend out a little more.
All right. So,
so fascinating about the conversation
about resistance. It was there when I woke this morning, you know. Uh-huh. And I just appreciate that. You know, the a little more clarification around it. And so I just, this is a little piece of content, but it's waking in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that I don't want to get out of bed, it's so warm here. And so, but I'm aware that lying there isn't often the best.
So there's an awareness that it's nice and warm and it's enjoying the moment, and there is the awareness that it's lying down there is not the best.
And because, you know, there's just, there's so much that could be done. I mean, let's see, now that's coming up. There is, not in the to-do list sort of thing, but there's a lot that would support the human.
So they're looking forward to, oh, I'm alive, I'm awake.
Right.
Oh, I'm getting aware.
Right. Oh, I'm getting warm. Yeah. I mean, so I mean, even like writing what we wrote a poem yesterday. I mean, you know, it's like, well, who's got time to write poetry? You know, sort of thing. Well, is that time in the morning, you know, what if that resistance was overcome and then that was the time to like write poetry or, you know, to pick up the paints or to, you know, just go sit it outside as the dawn is breaking. Mm-hmm. And so, yes.
May I stop you and repeat that? Because I think this is, it's a really interesting process because already there are so many things that are coming up. So you're lying there in bed, it's nice and warm, and it's like, oh, I just want to be here. It's so wonderful. And then and that's actually, so there's a resistance to waking up because there's a sensation of comfort.
It's the getting up.
The getting up.
Yeah.
Which I think is what we're talking about, because waking up and joyfully being part of life is probably the reason that getting up is termed as resistance. Right? So the conditioning doesn't want you to jump up and say, hello life, I'm available, use me as you will. So there's a lot of resistance to getting up for a lot of people because it means that you're alive.
Exactly.
And you're ready to participate in existence. Yeah. And so egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is going to do its best to stop us from just going, yeah, I'm ready.
And I guess, go ahead.
Well, and then the second piece, which I think is interesting, is because the awareness is when we do that, we can absolutely participate in poetry or paint, so whatever else. And the resistance is stopping us from an engagement with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. It's not the form of it. It's that engagement with life, because it's my experience. It's just things with Beth when it's so heightened, mm-hmm. that engagement with life and that those first
fresh.
Those first few hours of just.
It's no wonder that conditioning makes that the you wake up into it. Mm-hmm. Works on you all night, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. that first sense of the transition from sleep to awakening, which is such a fresh and such an exciting and creative place, has a stranglehold in depression and resistance that you don't want to get out.
Exactly. I mean,
I don't know this, Sipur, but maybe something to consider, which is the moment provides. Right, there are structures in life, and we were looking at this a little bit in high energy places to low energy places. But waking up, I think that's a conditioned belief, we go from 0 to 60. But waking up, if you think of it as a process, that it could be this moment of the eyes open, mm-hmm. there's an awareness that registering that we're awake, we're alive one more day, mm-hmm. it's nice and warm and comfortable. And we enjoy that moment, mm-hmm. till life is prepared to get up. And so it's not that the awareness of the resistance of I don't want to get up, which is conditioning taking that over. Mm-hmm. But if you relax into life will wake up.
Yeah.
Because it did wake up. It opened its eyes. It's ready to participate.
Yeah.
And the energy builds to the sufficient momentum to spring out of bed. And that's the unnatural piece of it. Mm-hmm. That we've been so conditioned to break the natural cycle, mm-hmm. that we don't have the patience to wait, mm-hmm. for the awakening to happen. Mm-hmm. Metaphorically, on many levels.
I really see what you're saying. I mean, it's a directing of the attention again. That's the overcoming of the resistance, maybe, in that place of not just succumbing to letting the attention go to.
Because I would project that you had that experience of waking up in the morning, snuggling in and mm-hmm. enjoying those 5 or 6 minutes, mm-hmm. where you feel warm, mm-hmm. and at some level there's an intuition, it's time to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And if you follow that intuition, you get out of bed.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Without anything that conditioned mind has to do to say, oh, you slug, whatever, you're lazy, you've got so much to do, whip yourself out when you're not ready, or whatever it is that it does.
Mm-hmm. So So then that's strengthening the intuition as well.
Instead of overcoming resistance, mm-hmm. which engages us back into the same system that's resisting and has our attention, mm-hmm. we're actually strengthening the other group of intuition, which knows how long can I enjoy myself with light in the warmth of the bed before I become light engaging to being alive. In a different energy state.
That's a great inquiry. You know, because it probably would be only more like 5 minutes rather than 30 minutes.
That's right. And that's the appropriate the movement of the energy, and the energy is allowed to naturally move.
And rather becoming another unkindness of, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
We're moving through this resistance, you're out of here, you know.
Yeah.
And it becomes a boot camp.
And you can enjoy the moment of the warmth and the comfort, mm-hmm. that's also part of the experience. Because that's not allowed.
Well, that's important. I'm excited.
Imagine that we're lying in bed, it's going to be a completely different experience. Thank you. Carol.
So I had an experience, I think what we were talking about earlier was process versus content. And so there's this conditioning that comes to me that two times I've been here at the monastery that you got to do everything right, you're screwing up, this kind of thing. So
seems to me that shows up for everything.
So, you know, no walking in the sanctuary with your shoes on today, just face down or something. So it was like, okay, I've got it down here, and the whole thing. So then we're meditating, and just out of nowhere, this thought comes, they're going to ask for that poem while you're in here today, and you didn't bring it. And it was a screeching halt and a quick hairpin turn into, you know, just terror, a sense of, okay, now this is it, you're out. Again, you're out, there's a cutoff, there's a separation. And so then I got into the debate, maybe I can just slip out and get it. And,
now the final straw, it's got to kick you out, but you got out in the middle of it.
Final straw. And you know, there's got to be a way. Well, there isn't a way, so now what? Oh, this is like, you know, in the email class when I also couldn't see a way, you know, and when I thought I was out then, too, and a couple of times, you know, when I thought this is the cutoff. So, it opened up that, well, this is a process, and that's really exciting because...
Oh, yay!
Yeah, it's a process.
Oh, yeah.
It could be even better than being a perfect one in the class that reads a poem. It could be even better. It could be the one that didn't and that has compassion for themselves anyway and just went whatever.
Oh, my God, what a fabulous meditation. Yeah, because I think the joy of the insight and the awareness is to be sitting there and for it to come at us out of left field. And instead of believing it, although it feels like we might be, to be sitting there in awareness and watch it try to do that thing, and then the practice that you've been doing, the insights that you've been having, as it was in the email class, okay, they didn't throw me out. What it says is going to happen is what it says is going to happen, and therefore it's process, and I can see the process of it, not the content of it. And wow, isn't this wonderful that I have another option available? And that option available is to have compassion for the person, and for compassion for the person who's listening to that and not believing it. Wow, that's practice working, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I think I heard somebody say is that the more times that we replace or allow, or the more times I see that isn't really true, and that. Oh, there's this other option. It's kind of like creating new pathways.
And the pathway, and your experience is that the pathway was there. It got activated in the process of identification, right? So you saw it, and then you've seen it again, and you see it again. And so when it's happening, there's access to it. And then when you go down that axis, when it opens up, it makes the axis more real. Mm-hmm. Because you no longer believe what the process of ego, it's available to you that that process is what it does to create suffering in your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Claire.
I want to talk about process of love.
Process of love.
So, I have a new vocation, and the piece that I love about it the most is that I knock on the door of a hospital room, and I have the intention of going in there and being aligned with life, supported by life, and being a presence of love and acceptance, like my agenda. And I feel so fulfilled and enriched doing this work, very privileged, looking at what gets in the way when I go in the room. And then I realized this morning that that outside of that room, that it would be good to practice that with this person.
So you have a new vocation, and when you knock on the hospital room to get into a place of being love and acceptance and alignment with life, and that's your offering when you walk through that hospital door.
And I'm good at it.
And you're wonderful at it. You're good at it. Mm-hmm. And then it dropped in, and that could be available to this person. Because it is true, isn't it, that when we, as you said, whenever we remove whatever is in the way of offering that to someone, we're giving it. But it's an active process to follow that back and say, that is what I am.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't receive that we are the love and acceptance that we're giving.
Yeah, that's been a big missing piece.
And that love and acceptance that we are, that we give, is also something we can receive.
Yes.
And it's actually three distinct processes. Right? The three distinct movements. Because we become that by removing what stands in the way, and we're able to offer it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been working on, is that can I see what gets in the way of me offering? I've been working on it so that that's going to get in the way, so I'm becoming more skilled when I'm in the room.
Yes, and that's the first process. Yeah. And you have to follow the projection back to honor the fact that it is here. That's the second process.
Mm-hmm.
And the third process is to say, I can receive it for this person too. Because if we don't do that, we don't have the experience of being the intelligence that animates through which the offering is possible. Or that we can receive the love and compassion of the intelligence that animates. I'm sorry, did I lose you? In all senses of the word, it's that wonderful ability that we possess as human beings to recognize the non-separate place that we are the intelligence that animates, or the intelligence that animates, as we would say, the intelligence that animates is us.
Mm-hmm.
The intelligence that animates is us. It for some of us, it's easy to allow to work on removing all of the filters and the karma that exists in the way of the channel moving through, so that we can be in service. And we give and we give and we give, but we never actually feel we're generous. Right? Because there is a process by which we have to have that mirror for ourselves in order to be able to receive that we are that which gives. Because giving is one direction, receiving is the other direction. And we might be conditioned to give, so that pathway is open. But we have to construct the pathway that allows that to flow back and say, wow, this is the generosity that gave, and the recipient of the love is also here.
Yes.
It's really practice. It's why the two-handed recording exercise is so important. Because in the first place, we're allowed to say what is going on for us. Then somebody is actually listening to that, which we don't have an experience of, then talking to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we listen back to the compassion, we actually recognize that the compassion that is being offered is also what we are. Mm-hmm. And if we don't practice all four movements, we don't have the complete acceptance of all the facets of that intelligence.
Right. Yeah, it kind of makes sense because I often hear, how can you do what you do? I can never do what you do. And there's part of me that kind of like knows that I love what I do, but notice there's kind of an edge around when I hear that sometimes I kind of feel separate from, or
yes.
And that makes more sense. It's kind of like that. That the flow there, but the flow back is not coming as easefully.
Yes, as easefully. And there is work, as you said, there's consciousness that there's something standing in the way of freely giving. And now there's consciousness or awareness that there's something that's in the way of receiving.
Right.
And it's the same thing. Because what stops us from being an instrument of life is egocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
And what stops us from accepting we are life is also egocentricity. Right?
Yes.
Because it's only the illusion of separation that we say beyond what gives and beyond what receives.
Mm-hmm.
How exciting. and the cool part of it is you already know how to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've already done it. It's the same process that you're working on to remove that which allows you to be the instrument of service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now you just have to apply the same process to be the instrument of deception.
My goodness. and that being the instrument of reception, it's not about ego. Me, I'm doing that for the flow of life.
Oh, absolutely. And that I would project that is the belief that prevents us from receiving that we're divine.
Mm.
It's egocentric. It's egotistical to do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's actually true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Only the ego would think it's egotistical to. to receive knowledge of
that I am,
or that we are that.
Because
it is only separation that would believe it isn't that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not hubris to acknowledge divinity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thank you. Phil.
So, I look at resistance too, a lot. And so see if this works. Say I set up a certain time to do something, say such as go to bed. And I practice that, I work towards it, I'm successful at it, and then there's times I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch how I'm just kind of ignoring, you know, it's kind of like when your mother calls, time to go to bed. I could hear myself saying it. One more minute, just a little bit. and it seems to me that I wanted to see if this is true. There's two ways to after it's like did it again. Two ways to handle that or to go with that. And one is to be upset or be, something's wrong, hit it again, or to bring compassion to the person that just didn't quite get it this time.
Mm-hmm.
And in lieu of the other conversation, the compassion seems to still be the practice and still leave the channels open, because then there's the opportunity to keep working with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let me see if I'm with you. So there's a particular commitment you've got, like going to bed, and sometimes you're successful with it and sometimes you're not. And in those times you're watching the same process of delay or procrastination to do it. And then there's a feeling bad around, oh, well, I didn't do it this time.
Well, there's the choice.
I could
feel bad, or I could go to compassion.
Okay.
I'm training myself
to go to compassion. And the question is whether that is, you know, the inquiry is, well, that seems to be the place where it's open for me to try again instead of feeling bad.
Yes, because kind of, I think, like in meditation, you know, when we find ourselves distracting, we want to come back to compassion, to love, to kindness, not to you know, beatings. And so that's how I train myself. I think it's kind of in line, I'm hoping, with the third day retreat, which I've done many times, you know, in the back of Making a Change for Good, that one. And so it's because then the next time it's like it's you know, it gets to be that certain time, and it seems it's easier to remember to, okay, so not, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is what you're looking at, but what it sounds like to me is feeling bad is never.
It's never.
It doesn't seem to be helpful on any level.
Right.
Right? It doesn't feel good, and basically feeds the ego process.
Exactly.
It keeps the ego, the self that feels alive, bad. So not committing to not feeling bad about anything, it seems to be a great practice no matter what.
Exactly.
And your experience is that if we don't go feeling bad and we move to a place of compassion, regardless of whether it assists us or not, even though it does assist you to the next time, assists us to keep the commitment or not, it really opens up the freeway of compassion. So if we don't, if we set, it seems to me, this is the way the practice training parses out on anything. One process is whether we keep a commitment or not. The second process is what happens when we do keep the commitment. And the third process is what happens when we don't keep the commitment. They're all distinct.
Right.
What gets confused is if I don't feel bad, I'll keep the commitment. If I do feel good when I keep the commitment, I'll keep the commitment. But actually, keeping the commitment has nothing to do with whether we feel bad or not. Because they're all separate processes, and just like we parse out receiving, giving, and projection, following a projection back, every commitment we can practice with in those components.
Yes.
So I keep my commitment or I don't keep my commitment is a process of listening to the voice or not listening to the voice that tells me to keep my commitment or not. And all the result of that is, do I keep my commitment or not?
Right. Right.
And then it's the same thing with feeling bad. If I have a commitment not to feel bad, then I don't feel bad.
Yeah, because that eliminates, you know, early on, in the very beginning when we started practicing, I think it was with meditation, but Sherry always said, you just don't make it a contest.
Yes.
And the contest comes in to that when I'm, you know, when it's like, it can be a contest, and mostly it's a contest to see if a person, you know, cannot get the beating or something.
That's right. You know? That's right. Exactly. So that's such an important point. In the conditioned world, if you don't keep your commitment, it's equated to feeling bad. And so the duality is whether or not I'm going to keep my commitment because whether or not I feel bad. And it's not helpful in keeping the commitment.
No, because it's like, okay, I lost.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's right. Or I won.
I lost.
Yeah.
Or if I did it, oh, I won.
Yes, exactly.
And that doesn't seem to help anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of just like riding the waves, you know, for me, and just smoothly going along and then, you know, listening for that time and then doing it. And if something has come up and then there is something that sometimes that comes up where it's like, say, you know, there's the deadline, it has to get done, then there's a compassionate choice to continue. Which I know is much different.
Yes.
Well, just one more minute, please.
Yes. Yes, and all of what you said is so important because it gives us a nuance of training that's important.
Yeah.
Where when we make a commitment, it gets smooshed together all that we're practicing, and we can tease it apart to say, really, keeping a commitment is a training in calibrating to life and not the conditioned mind. Mm-hmm. So it's a moment of presence. As soon as I know that it's time to sleep, life is telling me to sleep and I will sleep. If life is saying and calling me to finish that email before I go to sleep, that's what I'm present to. So it's not about keeping the commitment or not, it's really about, which is the content. The process is one of presence. Now, I did or didn't keep my commitment, and there's another process choice, to feel bad or not to feel bad. And so I actively decide one or the other. And then the third place is, how am I with myself when I kept the commitment or did not keep the commitment? Did I go to egocentricity or did I go to compassion?
Yeah.
You have to practice with all of that with every commitment.
Yeah, that's so neat just to have it all
parsed out.
That is so neat, yeah, because it makes it all the little, like you say, the little nuances very, very clear.
Yeah.
In all the ways we practice when we don't even know it sometimes.
Yes, yes, and that's why the transformation happens, because conditioned mind can't keep up with all the things
yeah.
that are changing
yeah.
as we make choices for life and not conditioned mind.
Right, right. That's why another early on is you'd be sitting there, you know, working really hard on either practicing or whatever it is you're committed to do, and fail, maybe. And it doesn't matter, somehow weeks later you notice you're completely transformed because all this other was going on and we didn't even know it. Thank you.
Okay, Rebecca, and then June, and then June.
Okay, so I'll try to keep it short so we can get. So I just saw something that feels really fun and big to explore. So I see that. So one of my commitments since I got here was the nightly flossing my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and there were a long list. You know, several times throughout the time there've been longer and shorter lists of everyday commitments: 10,000 steps, flossing teeth, or whatever. And then I would do the stickers. Okay, check or star or smiley face or whatever. And over time, around these daily commitments, over time I've noticed that I've lost interest in putting stickers on based on whether or not I did those things. And now every night I just go and grab some markers and I just decorate the number on the calendar or put a sticker on or maybe write a word of, wow, I love, just whatever was big that day. And I haven't really, analyzed it or I've just sort of noticed that this is, that I don't really do that check, sticker thing anymore. But I am still paying attention to whether I'm keeping, my daily commitments. And what you're saying about their all distinct processes feels like what's undergirding that shift
mm-hmm.
in me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like, because I guess there was just something that felt like I was being graded at the end of the day. That there was not, it wasn't intuitive. But I do love stickers and drawing on my calendar every night. You know, that's fun. And it does, and somehow it is all a part of my daily practice.
Yeah.
It just isn't linked anymore with whether
yes.
I get the sticker or not.
Yes, and it's so beautiful to notice the transformation of structure.
Yes.
Right? That initially, when we know we're not going to floss our teeth, the absoluteness of the structure and the focus on the content of the accomplishment is really, really important. Then when we train ourselves, we have freedom, because we're not going to listen to the voice that says don't floss your teeth,
exactly.
But we continue to pay attention, because if we did not floss our teeth 5 times, that would flag us to go, okay, back to content focused on structure.
Uh-huh.
But once we're in the process of, I'm not going to not keep these commitments, because, I won't floss my teeth. Before, I didn't floss my teeth, but I've always brushed my teeth.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing in our awareness that says we need a requirement of a structure to brush our teeth, because it's so ingrained that we won't do it.
Yeah.
And we reach a point in training where flossing the teeth is like brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
It's not something that the voices use to prevent, that the voices resist.
Right.
And so we let go the raft there.
Right. I think exactly what it was to me. Yeah.
And so then the process of doing the sticker or whatever else is just a celebration
of
what you did accomplish.
It's just actually, it isn't even what I accomplished. It's just a celebration of practice.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Lovely. A celebration of practice.
Yeah.
Because I would bet that's something that ego doesn't allow us to do without being mindful of it.
Right.
Right? And just in the case of it doesn't allow us to receive that we are the intelligence that animates, we're not given credit, because life doesn't actively celebrate. Because it is a celebration.
Yeah.
That until we mirror that for ourselves,
We don't see it.
It is. I was just making that connection too with the opening of the pathway of receiving.
Yes.
Because that simple little celebration is a moment of receiving.
Yes.
And the same with the structure of the poem last night. It was that assignment and just having the time to do that was such a rich
receiving.
And from that, I mean, it goes back to trust the structures, trust the process, you know, over and over and over. Because as a result of that, or what, I guess I don't know the result, but what followed that was in the night, there was just this, all these insights around a koan kind of question of what nourishes your soul that just dropped in from having had. So it's like it wasn't coming in. Here's the assignment, write a poem. Oh, okay, here it is.
The moment provides.
Yes, the moment provides. And sometimes life's best answer is there's not an answer yet. Just wait for it. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. Oh, I just love it when that happens.
I do too. It's a real faith builder.
Yes. And I project that's why no matter how much we do, whatever we do in terms of giving or any of the other practices, the practice of receiving is so important because it's the primary skill by which we engage with life.
Yes.
If we are not tuned to receive life, we can't be it. And receive its beauty, receive its generosity, receive its compassion, receive its wisdom, receive its intelligence.
Yeah.
That's what conditioning blocks us to the most.
Yeah.
And we can all use all the structures in the world to believe to build the receiving pathways.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jane, and then Kim.
We were invited last night to look at when we feel beautiful,
uh-huh.
when we feel one with everything.
Uh-huh.
And I spent a little bit of time with it, but I needed to pack. What just dropped in, I was reflecting on my time here and made a list of all the things I'm leaving here and the things I'm taking with me. And I just had this overwhelming sense of feeling so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It's like beautiful, F-U-L-L, like overflowing.
Uh-huh.
And then I found myself rehearsing what I was going to say about feeling beautiful here. And my beloved mentor came in and said, oh, Jane, remember? That's one of the things you're leaving.
Leaving behind hurdles.
Yes, for life, you know that thing that we've heard a lot. Life isn't a dress rehearsal. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
This year now, this is the show.
Uh-huh.
And then what came in that was such a gift was, this is the show.
Uh-huh.
And it's a sold-out performance.
Uh-huh.
It's a full house.
And you have the front row seat. And you're
an actress. Yeah, and what was so incredible was like, then I said, well, I thought, oh no, this was what dropped in was, and no one's watching. Because that's been a big thing for me, is I'm always performing. Am I doing okay? Do you like me now? And so it's this great thing of, it's a full house and no one's watching.
Uh-huh.
And then what was such a gift was life. It's a full house, sold out performance, full of life, and I felt this incredible oneness. That it's not a bunch of one people, you know, separate people, but it was like I might be on the stage doing my thing, but I am totally one with everybody. And then it also dropped in because I have such an issue about being judged. And no one will be writing a review tomorrow. So it was just this lovely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not even going to reflect that at all. Because it is that most spiritual experience of going from living in the illusion of separation to dropping into a subjective experience of complete fulfillment. And the way that we often talk about it is lover, loving, and beloved all are one.
Uh-huh.
And so there's no need to, I mean, that whole ego process of
of going externally for validation and approval and judgment and all those things that are conditional, that we seek approval because we hear disapproval all the time. When all that drops away, that was the meaning of the poem. Right? That's the meaning of that was your experience. When all of the conditioning drops away, it's a full house. I'm the star. No one's watching, no one's reviewing. And I belong.
Yeah.
And that is the feeling of beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. June.
I'm not going to say what I thought I was going to say.
Okay.
Okay, because the thing about rehearsing.
Uh-huh.
Every time, every sharing group, there's been rehearsing.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked about it a lot. And I've been judged a lot internally. And what just arose when Jane mentioned that was, well, what is that? What happens when I put my hands up? I'm going to be second or third in the row in the queue. And the rehearsing, so to speak, starts. What function is that? Does it have a function other than just egocentricity, grabbing a person out of the moment, image monitoring, making sure you say the right thing? Well, it has a huge function other than that, it seems. It's getting clear. It's, for me it is, it's being clear with what it is I have to say, if possible, just as if I'm going to contribute. Maybe it helps to have some notion of what's going to come out of my mouth, you know, and maybe there is the possibility to develop the skill of not rehearsing and just opening your mouth and just being clear and a contribution, and I don't seem to have that. So that's just sort of what I wanted to say.
May I reflect, Joe? Because I think what you're... So there's the awareness of... So you're not saying what you're going to say because of what you heard previously about not rehearsing. And what opened up was an inquiry into, well, why is there a process of rehearsal? Is it an egocentric process that snatches me out of the moment? Or is it a helpful process that assists me to be of service when I open my mouth? And the answer is, I don't know yet. And so then that inquiry allows for whether or not there is the skill that develops to just open your mouth and say something, or to have life assistance before of translating something before it's presented. But what it removes is the judgment or the unexamined belief that because you're rehearsing, you are judged, and it's something to judge you with. That's the beauty and clarity of the moment. Right, of the Sangha experience group, which brought to light of an unexamined process and brought it into the light of awareness, and then releases us and has us the freedom to look with inquiry instead of just going to a place of, okay, I accept the judgment.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I really shouldn't rehearse.
Yeah,
and that's what the other person's saying.
Yeah.
It's, I'm trying to spin it so I sound intelligent or something.
Yeah.
And it's really so often not that.
Yeah, and it brings us to that. We don't want an absolute of rehearsing is bad without the examination of, is rehearsing useful? Does it really take me out of the present? Can I have an expanded awareness?
And rehearsing even the word for it.
In rehearsing, yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a word for it, but...
Preparation. I mean, is there... Because the inquiry could be, is the awareness expanded enough That process can go, because if attention is on awareness, it can hold every process in the universe. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that we're not present, it just means that we have expanded awareness.
Okay.
Right. Well, then we can have our own experience of it. There's a collapsed awareness, but the only thing I'm identified with is conditioning. There's an expanded awareness where I'm aware that the conditioning is going on in the process, as generosity and love and appreciation of nature is also simultaneously going on while I am yelling in my head at the driver who just cut me off at the pass. Anna, we have a minute. Go for it. I think we'll take the indulgence for a
group. No, it can be a minute. That's perfect. We're in the middle of a practice weekend, and I just wanted to say a big hooray and hallelujah for that and for all that's offered. I love them. They just feel so practice-y.
Yeah.
And as I was sitting, what dropped in was such a celebration of practice.
Yes. Yes. Such a celebration of practice. It was what I felt when I sat on the cushion and walked and looked at the entire hall filled up. Just like Penny was mentioning, a garden full of people. It's a hall full of people. And it's just such a celebration of we're all here practicing. What a Sunday experience.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. That was all. And just the, like, really receiving how lovingly and carefully the structures are offered. You know, I felt it. Like, there was an assignment where we got to pick out a quote before we went to do working meditation in the garden, and just this beautiful basket and these lovingly folded pieces of paper, and it was just such a receiving of the love and the structure and all of it. And that was all.
And the miracle is that we have practiced the pathway to receive it.
Yes.
That's why it feels so practiced.
So practicing.
Because all the privilege in the world without the ability to receive it means that we don't accept the we don't get to experience the generosity of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was all. Just a big thank you.
Amen. Lovely women. Our deep gusher.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.